Assalamu alaikum, herzlich willkommen bei Cool Almanistan. Heute haben wir zu Gast einen kurdischen Iraker namens Ayaz und als Mitmoderatorin, wie auch beim letzten Mal, haben wir Seydan Ateş zu Gast und mich. Begrüße mich jetzt das erste Mal, das habe ich noch nie gemacht. Mein Name ist Tugay Sarac. Genau, wie gesagt, wir haben heute Ayaz da. Ayaz war auch wie Rasha beim letzten Mal bei unserer Auftaktveranstaltung da am 23. Oktober. Und genau, Ayaz, möchtest du dich kurz selbst vorstellen vielleicht? Ich finde, es geht mit eigenen Worten immer besser, als wenn ich das mache. Or would you like to introduce yourself? Because we're going to do it in English again today. Yeah,
Yes.
sorry.
Maybe next podcast will be in German when I trust my German more than this. Well, I am Ayaz. I have been an activist for almost 9 years. I worked in the Middle East mainly, in the Arab region. I moved to Germany a couple years ago. I'm still working in Germany and also in Middle East. I travel there, here and there. I work on LGBT and women rights. I'm a feminist myself, and I'm very proud of that. And I'm very glad to be with you.
Thank you. It's fantastic that you say you are a feminist, and that would be also a point what could be for another podcast, a special point, because the theory and the practice is that when we talk about feminism in Europe in general, mostly we are talking about females, we are talking about women, and people don't connect feminism that much with man. And my experience is, and what I've seen in the last years is that in the Islamic world, much more men are working on the issues of women, and they call themselves feminists very easily, very relaxed. And that made me so happy when I realized that years ago. And thank you to underline this point today as well.
I actually totally understand the idea of like connecting feminism to women, and I totally disagree with it because I think feminism, I believe, I don't think, I believe feminism is an ideology that will make all of us as humans better. It will lead to peace. It will lead to peace, prosperity, and many other changes, positive changes that we are all to have.
I agree totally. And coming now to the event of 23rd of October, what we had in our mosque, the opening event for our Competence Center for Islam and LGBT. And you was one of the speakers this night, and the audience was so happy to listen to you, and they want to hear more about your work and about you. So we said, let's use this opportunity that we are so good in touch and do this podcast and tell more about or talk about your work a little bit more. Maybe you please start what was your thesis and what was your statement, what you had made in at this evening, and then we go on with some questions and so on.
Let's do that. Well, first of all, I'm very glad that people who listened to me actually liked what I said, and people who heard about my work want to hear more about it. That means I'm doing something good. That means I'm affecting people inside Middle East and outside. And I'm very proud of that. Thank you so much for calling me again to do this. My speech, or I don't call it a speech actually, what I said in the event that we had was basically about the work I do in Rasan organization in Iraq, and the work I did throughout my life through my activism. And I connected that to religion, how religion affects everybody's life, how religion in today's world, and also in the past, since religion started, is shaping our culture and our mindsets And how can we as activists shake that, basically? How can we introduce our new ideas of the world we live in today to these people who are only believers, basically? And I connected also that with the work I do for LGBT and for women, and how I worked with imams and other religious leaders, even religious women in Middle East, especially in Iraq, in the Kurdish region, how I brought them into activism, working on LGBT with me. It was a very challenging experience. We spent years on that until we do it. The fact that I said that in the mosque, in Ibn Rushd Mosque in Berlin, that was actually, as I said back then, a very, very important and very precious time for me, because I felt a very strong connection in the mosque. I felt the mosque could be a starting point for so many movements in the Islamic world. And I'm looking forward for that, actually. And I'm looking forward for you, Seyran, to teach what you started to others, so they can start something like that.
Yeah, thank you for that. But, you know, such a work cannot made by just one single person. So what happened in the mosque was in this day and before in the last years is that people come together to stand up for the same idea, for more equality, for more spirituality in our religion, and stand up for liberalization and for the rights of the LGBTIQ community as well. So
I totally agree. And I think that's the essence of religion. It's to protect us. It's to develop us. It's for us to make us better humans. It's not the opposite. And that's what you are trying to tell people.
Yes, and I try to say the need for spirituality is independent from your gender and your sexual identity. And this is the same what you are doing in your work in Iraq or here in Germany.
Yeah.
So let's listen to your experience and your work the last years.
Yes. Well, in Rasan organization, and even before Rasan, actually, I started working for women. My work started after I decided to become a feminist myself. I was only very young in my high school when I arguing with my teacher about God. I was always telling my teacher, "Why are you calling God he, not she?" And my teacher had no answer for that. And several times I was kicked out of my class because of that question.
Oh my God.
Yes. And I was actually I was pointed out among students, like, this guy is always asking why God is not a woman. And the students question my sexuality, my family, my religion, my ethics and everything. And it made me. It put me in a very bad situation back then. I had to fight my teachers and I had to do so many things, but that developed in itself. I took the challenge, I studied it until I became a feminist. And I think I had this idea of being a feminist in my mind even before reading feminism, even before learning about feminism. And that what takes that back to our conversation in the beginning, that feminism is an ideology for everyone. After I finished my school, I started an organization. And it was a feminist organization, of course, back in then. And we started working with women. We worked with women survivor of ISIS, women who were pregnant from ISIS. We worked with women who are facing violence. We worked with refugees. We worked on protection on several aspects in women rights. And we also worked on LGBT. And that was the core of our work in the last couple of years. The most important part about our work with LGBT is that we focused on religion. and how religion is affecting LGBT rights in the Islamic world. I started developing, I actually started with a research, Seyran, I didn't tell you that. I started with a research in my university on LGBT. It was my second or third year, I think. I did an LGBT research in the Kurdish region of Iraq, studied their situation, how they live, what are their struggles in the law, in religion, in their families, etc. And I used that research as a base to write projects and proposal for my organization to work officially on LGBT rights. Mm-hmm. It took me one complete year to get the permission to work on LGBT rights in Iraq because it's a taboo. It's still a taboo indeed. And I started working with religious leaders. I started working with women leaders, with politicians, with government officials. I brought all of them to one place with my team. Of course, as you said in the beginning, nobody can do all of this alone. I had a great team and I still have them who helped me through this journey, who helped me prepare workshops, who helped me invite people. We could target more than, I would say, 300 religious leaders, not only religious leaders, sorry, 300 leaders, political, religious, social, etc. And we could manage to make them allies to support our cause to work for LGBT. And one of the great success stories was an imam who established an article supporting LGBT rights on the Ministry of Religion, the Kurdish Ministry website. And it's still there, so people can check it, actually.
Yeah, that was the question in my mind. What are your findings and what have you learned from the religious leaders, especially? When I met you first, so you told me that you worked together with religious leaders when it comes to LGBTIQ rights in Iraq. Mm. So people think there are no LGBT NGOs or there are no activism in this region. So I was not surprised, but a lot of people here in Europe are surprised, or they cannot believe that there are even religious leaders who takes care about this issue.
I think we should blame the Western journalism here, the Western media, because the Western media is only focusing on, unfortunately, on the negative parts, on the wars, on the terrorists that's happening in the Middle East. Nobody is taking into consideration what good work is being done on the ground. Middle East is famous for its thinkers, philosophers, scientists. Throughout history, Middle East is a region of prosperity. It's a region of culture. It's a region of education, and we still have this kind of people. It's still full of science. It's still full of research, of educated people, and the understanding of Western world, if I should call it West, unfortunately, it's not complete. It's not the true picture. So I totally blame the media for the understanding of people. And I also blame the people themselves, actually. Young people here should do more research. They should read more. We have social media. We have internet. We have bloggers. We have YouTube. We have so many other resources that people can get educated from. It's not only Deutsche Welle, people. It's not only CNN. Like, go read more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe you can you can give us and our audience a picture from your point of view to Middle East and Iraq. So how should people imagine the daily work, for example, of NGOs and activists?
And I would say,
Maybe also recommendations for blogs and other news pages, so people here can educate themselves on activism and LGBT and good things in the Middle East, because there are certainly many.
Yeah. I can, I, sorry, before answering your question, Tuga, I can, Steyran, could you please repeat your question? Because you also asked me a question before talking about the Western media, and I forgot to answer it.
How was your experience with the religious leaders? You know, so what finally are your findings with the religious leaders? Because a lot of people cannot bring that together. There are religious leaders in Iraq taking care about the issue of LGBTIQ community. Oh my God, it's unbelievable.
Well, it sounds unbelievable, but it's not unbelievable. And I think nothing is impossible if we try, if we try enough.
For me, it was not a surprise. You know, I know that from Turkey, from other countries, but so many people in Europe, they used to say, oh my God, surprised, or I cannot believe that.
Well, I'm going to have to say one more thing about this before answering your two questions. Sorry. People in here get surprised about so many things, apparently. Like, they are surprised about us talking, for example, many languages. They are surprised about me being educated. I don't know why.
Yeah,
it just makes no sense.
Fighting for freedom.
Yes, like, they are like, oh wow, you fight for freedom, you fight for rights.
You are sitting on a table and eating.
No, right? Like, where do you think I come from? Caves?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, my experience actually with religious leaders is, you know, Steyran, it's all about how you approach people at the end.
Mm.
It's all about how you study people, how you understand people. For me, as I said, I did a long research. It was a result of study of several years until I decided to approach religious leaders and political leaders and social leaders in my society. I talked to Kurdish scientists, language scientists, in order to be able to translate the knowledge of English on LGBT to Kurdish in a respectful manner, in a simple way that people can understand. I wouldn't say in a religious way, but with a lot of respect in mind for religion. When I did all this translation, and I used this translation in my trainings, in the training manuals that I developed, that I used with these religious leaders and other leaders. It was a process. It wasn't a one-time thing. It wasn't that 10 religious people will come and then I will talk to them for a couple of days and then, bam, they are allies. No. It was a build-up process. It was a work of months and months and meetings and actually making them part of the organization and making them feel what other people are going through until they are convinced. So it was a process, I would say. And answering two guys' question about where people can find good information about this, people can simply Google local NGOs in Iraq if they want to hear about Iraq. People can read UN reports. There are so many resources. You can go to university pages. There are so many universities who are doing research on that. You can go don't go to governments because they are corrupted. No government websites, please. But there are so many links and websites that I can maybe share with you later. You can also put in the podcast if you like.
Definitely.
And so maybe just explain our audience a little bit about the daily life of the LGBT community in Middle East, Iraq, where you lived for a long time and have mm-hmm. connections still.
Definitely. And I still go there, as I said. Well, you also, I remember you asked me about the daily routine of work as well for organizations. For LGBT people, daily life could be very challenging, depending on the area you live in, of course, whether it's a city, whether it's a village, whether it's a small town, whether it's in the, and we're talking about Iraq now. In Middle East, contexts are very important. In one country, you will find several contexts. It's not like here. For example, here, if you go to Sweden, law is law. Everywhere in Sweden, law is law. Government is government. Rules are rules. It applies to everyone. But in Middle East, that's not the case. For example, I would say specifically about Iraq, since I work there a lot. In the northern part in Iraq, for example, in Sulaymaniyah city, you will find more openness, you will find more acceptance. But if you go to Basra, if you go to Ramadi, for example, which is like a city in the middle of Iraq, it's very frustrating there. People get killed, people get violated against, people get harassed on the streets. Especially nowadays, like there are campaigns against LGBT people in Iraq since forever, and terrorists are using applications to find people, to find gay people, to find, you know, LGBT people in general. And it's very frustrating because once a person can, if you cannot be yourself where you are, if you cannot be yourself in your home, what else can you do? What else is expected from you, actually? Yeah. So it's very challenging. And same goes to the work, actually. Like as activists, you put your life every minute in danger. Like I was personally beaten on the street when I started activism in Iraq. I was, my family were threatened several times. As I told you, like even when I was in school, I was, you know, like they were harassing me because I was asking about God. So imagine working for LGBT.
Yeah, but as you know, it's still going on. It's not that people give up. Mm. That's what is great for me. I had this experience also. I know this experience also in Turkey, for example, in the eastern part of Turkey, where a lot of Kurdish and conservative people used to live. It's much more hard to do this work than in Istanbul, for example. So the same in Iraq. And people are still, even when it's really much more dangerous to do that there, they're still doing this work daily.
Yeah, definitely.
And there is a LGBTIQ reality. So people don't give up their sexual identity just because the dictatorship is around surrounding their is in their country.
I totally agree. And I am in contact with many Turkish activists in Istanbul and in other cities as well. And I think in Turkey it's equally challenging to the other Middle Eastern countries. In Turkey, the government is bad. The traditions are very strong in so many areas in Turkey. People are being like, even though when Istanbul parade happened, every single year there are hundreds of problems in Istanbul parade. Every single year it happens because activists and LGBT people want to show the world that they exist. And every single year they are oppressed, unfortunately. But this is our bravery. This is our fight. At the end, we are activists. And well, as you said, we will never stop, even if there is a bad government.
What do you think what could help and support the LGBT community and activists in Middle East from the point of Europe or coming from the activism here in Europe? So what could we do, or what could the governments do?
There are so many things that could be done. It's globalism, right? We are all connected, whether we want or not. Sweden is selling guns. Netherlands is selling guns to Iraq or to other countries in the Middle East. It's a political... The world is connected whether we want or not, if whether it's through selling guns or food or oil or whatever it is. Governments can definitely put pressure on governments. That's in the government level. Government can ask government to change laws. They can ask governments to impose rules on people. And this is on a government level. On an organizational level, of course, we can support the activism there by funding, by giving awareness, by education, by strengthening communication, by working together, by telling them, the activists there, that we are here, we hear them, we support them, we know their struggle. Mm-hmm. And I think all of this is being partially done, but not in a very good way.
coming to education, this is maybe a very important point. It's also in my mind to say always we need more and more and more education and enlightenment. So how we could do that in a safe way? So maybe some exchanges between Middle East schools and German schools, for example. Do you have experience with such projects?
I have experience not with Germans, but I have several experience with exchange experience that actually made me who I am today, I should say, because it wasn't only that, but it definitely contributed to my personality. I did exchange programs in the US, in the Netherlands, in Sweden, in so many other places, and they helped me. They helped me a lot because once, especially if you are a young activist, mm-hmm. if you meet other young people like you who are fighting discrimination, inequalities around the world, it's a huge push for you mm-hmm. to fight more. And sharing the experience with other people is a learning tool. Like, as you said, exchanging programs is definitely a choice to for that. But also we can work on a bigger scale if we have enough resources. Working with individuals as exchange programs is a great idea, but working on bigger scales with organizations or institutions or governments, I think, is more effective.
Can I add something? Is there a way we always speak about, or often we speak about, how the Western governments could support us, or the governments in which we live could support us and our LGBT people and women in our home countries, let's say, in Iraq, Turkey, and wherever. But is there a way where we could use our own history to show our people that it wasn't always that bad, that openness for homoeroticism, homosexuality was already there, not only in the Ottoman Empire, also in the Abbasid Caliphate and so on. It was quite open. And
even before that, actually, even before the Ottoman Empire, definitely.
Exactly. The Abbasid Caliphate in the 13th and 12th century, it was pretty open. How definitely. Can we show our people that it was good already? And how do we show them that this isn't a westernization, that this is just, rethinking our own history?
This is actually a very important point. Thank you for bringing it up. And as I said in the beginning, I said, religion is there because religion is there to make us better, to make us live better. And so other philosophical ideas as well. Religion is, for me, at the end, a philosophy. It's a way of life. And if you look at the Islamic history or the Middle Eastern history, even before Islam, people were open about these things. And unfortunately, throughout history, that has been changed because of politics. Politics has changed our history to not only our understanding of the present, it has changed our understanding of our roots. And once we clarify, as you said, once we clarify these facts to people, and this is what I have been doing as well, it's part of the manuals I told you about, looking at the history of LGBT in Islam, in the Arab world, in the Middle Eastern world, how it was and how it changed throughout history, is a very powerful tool to convince people that, hey, this is not a Western idea. Hey, this is not something that is against God. Hey, this is not something that you should fight. Yeah.
Thank you.
And when we talk about exchange programs, do you have some new projects in your mind, or do you have contact with organizations in Middle East whom we could do such exchange programs or offer?
Oh yeah, definitely. I have a lot of them for you. If you want to start such a project, I am very happy to help you. I am an activist every second of my life. Mm-hmm. So I am definitely in touch with so many activists from the region and outside the region and diaspora as well.
So if somebody from the audience or people who are listening to us also interested to have, maybe like to support or have ideas, they could also get in touch with us and with you to support such exchange programs. That, can we say that?
I definitely, it's an open invitation for people to participate and for people to fund and for people to help in any possible way. So yes, it is an open invitation. Please listen to us. We need this. Do it for us.
When I was in Sulaymaniyah in 2017, so I made this experience, what you mentioned and what you described, that there is a very open-minded young generation. They are fighting for freedom, and they have the ideas of freedom, what people used to call Western style or Western enlightenment. And we are always fighting against this idea that the human rights are not universal. They are made by Western countries, and they are just coming from the culture of Western countries, as you also mentioned before. So this is such a stupid, in my opinion, such a stupid theory, because if you go to Middle East or to other countries in this world, you will always find the same fights, the same activism, the same wish for freedom and the dreams for equality and fight against patriarchy. So women everywhere in the world, they have the same challenge, and the LGBT community as well.
Definitely. So
what my experience was that there are only few organizations who are aware about that and are really serious with the exchange programs and with the work. They are not coming like big brothers and sisters. This is what I want to point out. So if some organizations go to Middle East from Western countries, they used to behave like the big brother and the big sister who tell the people what they should do. But my experience was that the people know what they want. They can speak out themselves. They are independent, and they are adults, you know, they are self-determined adults. They are not little childs, you know.
There's a huge group
of young people. So what's going on with this young people there in Middle East in these days? They are frustrated.
Well, thank you for bringing this up. Actually, this is a very important point. Human rights is indeed universal. And if you look at history, human rights throughout history, when the fight for women started, when, if you look at very old history of humankind, when agriculture was discovered, and when during these times, women around the world started revolutions together, feminism roots and ideas started back in history all over the planet. It didn't start it from the West. It didn't start it from Germany or Sweden or anywhere else. It started universal, and that's why it should stay universal. Indeed, there are so many organizations in the Middle East that believe feminism is Western, that believes LGBT rights is a Western ideology. And indeed, I have to add this, there are Western organizations who consider themselves better than other organizations in the Middle East. So they take the role of Big Brother, and that's also very wrong.
Arrogant, isn't it also very arrogant?
It's arrogant, and it comes from their culture, Seyran. And that's why I told you in the beginning, when they look at me and they say, wow, you finished university, why you are an activist, wow, you speak five languages, how come you are from Middle East? It's the same mindset applies to the organization that applies to the individuals too. Yeah. So it is like that. We need to change the understanding of Western people about East. We really need to do that. We need to start because we as activists, you and I and Tuga, we live here now. It's our responsibility as well to tell our circles like, hey, you know, you don't know enough about our region or where we come from originally. You should know more. You should read more. You can't act like our big brother because we know as much as you do.
And that's also something we really have to point out, that, okay, we live in Germany and we do this work, and we can do it safely, maybe also because we live in Germany, but you are from Iraq, and there are also organizations that have been working on those issues, women's rights, LGBT rights, before I was even born in Turkey, before I was born in Germany, and they do that same work in Turkey.
Yeah.
And yes, indeed.
Here only see us, and they're like, oh yeah, they do it because they live here. They can do that because they live in Germany. And then they influence their home countries. But no, we don't. It's been the same issues in our
it's
home.
It's not, definitely.
It's the other way around. You know, I was influenced by Turkish activists and in so many points when it comes to religion. And I know much more intelligent people and reform people who worked for reformation from Islamic countries.
Yes.
They used to live there than in Western countries. So it's the way
I think.
The other way around. But please, to the audience, don't misunderstand us. I'm looking for real partnership when it comes to universal rights and LGBT rights. So working together, Europeans, Germans, Swedes, Danish people, French people, whatever, working together is and in with equal rights and on the same eye level, how we say it in German.
Yeah.
So really in real partnership.
There's no master, no apprentice. This is just a real partnership.
That's this is what we are looking for. Yeah. And behave like they are always better and they are teaching us. So this is what we are looking for.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, that's very true. But I have to also mention that there are many good organizations that we collaborated with that I'm sure there are hundreds of organizations that I don't know about that are very good working from this part of the world in Africa or in Middle East or in Asia or everywhere else. Indeed, we have to make sure that people here and organizations here know that simply we are not dumb. Sorry for saying it in a very direct way, but we are not dumb, and that's what I feel when walking on the street here.
That's true, especially when your German is not so good, like your Kurdish and your English and the other languages what you just speak, that you try to explain things in a German which is not perfect, like my English, so people always connected that to your intelligence.
It's frustrating. It's honestly
your
abilities,
your political thoughts, your profession, and this is a pity. Absolutely,
it's definitely a pity. And I think Germans should learn more English. We live in Germany. We need to learn German. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah,
but I think it's globalization, guys. You should learn English. You know, like your country's trading with all the countries in the world. Yeah. Come on.
isn't it really, really? I don't know to explain that. Isn't it really curious that much more refugees, 14, 15 years old boys and girls are speaking fluently English than the German social workers and helpers in this field? You know, this is what I really could experience in the last years when I met refugees, when they visit our mosque, for example. So you can find much, much more people who can speak fluently English in the group of refugees than in the group of the Germans.
I have to say, Seyran, that when a person lives in challenges and in difficulties, this person either give up and became a big failure or become a big successor and learn from the challenges he, she, they live in. And I think this principle goes to the people here. People here are very comfortable. They live very comfortable and they don't have challenges as much as we do. So they don't have to try hard. They don't have to work on themselves. They don't have to learn 5 languages in order to survive. They can just speak German and make good money and travel to the world with their passport. So why caring about learning English?
Yeah, maybe that's one of the reasons. So we have the same experience in France or in Italy, that people used to, yeah, yeah.
In France, it's, don't even get me started in France. In France, it's terrifying. You have to speak French.
Yeah, this what I want to say. They deny the necessity in globalization that we maybe need to speak more English everywhere or have one unique language. Yeah, but still, as you said, as you mentioned, it's very important to learn German.
It's very important to learn German, but imagine us.
Ist ja auch zu dir. It's really important. And it's also, we have to say that.
When ich probiere jeden Tag,
wenn wir uns unterhalten, sage ich dir jedes Mal, du musst aber auch dein Deutsch praktizieren. Yeah, this is not what we are saying when we explain the situation of the language just or talk about the refugees who can speak very well and great.
Yes, but imagine, Seran, if we have one language all over the world, how better our communication will become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many problems will we solve?
Yeah, much, much more. Yeah, and
but that would lead to some people that they have to learn five languages, and then the sixth language would have to be English, you know? So this is stressful.
Yes, it's a long-term plan too, guys. We can't start that now.
Yeah, it's coming to the end. Thank you for this great introduce to your work and your activities, and thank you for doing that. Thank you for your cooperation with us, and we are looking forward to do much, much more projects together, a lot of projects. We have a lot of ideas, and just follow us and follow this podcast of my great nephew.
Well, I didn't talk too much today, but yeah.
who didn't?
Usually I do.
Yeah, who didn't talk too much? He had so much work to do, but yeah, Ayaz, we listened to you and we enjoyed.
Thank you. I really enjoyed too. I'm so glad I'm with you both. It has been a joy to talk to you. I hope I wasn't very heavy or very philosophical in the information I gave. I tried to keep it simple. I tried to be relative. I'm trying to say, I hope people can relate to what I say and what I said early. Relatable. Thank you. Yes. I didn't, if I said anything wrong to anyone, if anybody understood me wrong in anything I said, I apologize. I didn't mean to. I just spoke up my mind. And if you disagree with anything I said, please write me. Tell me you are wrong. Tell me you are stupid. Change your mind. I will do it.
I agree with you. Fantastic. I asked to say that. I agree absolutely with you. And if we touched somebody's emotions or thoughts in a wrong way, just tell us. We can do it better. Nobody is perfect. So we can change our style, our language, and our soul. So let's discuss and argue. So this is what is important, that we still debate and we talk to each other.
Indeed.
And coming to this point, I'm sure that a lot of people have a lot of questions. And if you have some more questions than we did here now, then please contact us.
Yeah, contact us on Instagram, by email, wherever.
Tell them how they can get in touch with you or your podcast.
Yes. If people want to get in touch with me, either via email, which is queer@ibn-goethe-moschee.de or tugay.sarraj on Instagram. And also Anlaufstelle Islam Diversity on Instagram. So there are lots of ways. Just Google us and you will find ways. And also, Ayaz, would you like to also give your contact so people could message you? Or should we just, if they have questions, should we just send them to you?
People can contact me. I'm unfortunately no longer on social media because it's consuming all my energy and time. So people can contact me maybe through my email. You can, it's Ayaz, A-Y-A-Z. Shalal, shalal@gmail.com.
OK, Okay, and they can also get in touch with us and we make the connection.
Fantastic. That also works, always.
So nobody can say now, you didn't give me any information to get in touch with you. So,
yes.
All the information. Thank you for being with us. And now.
Thank you very much. Es war mir und uns wie immer ein inneres Blumenpflücken. Assalamu alaikum.
Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye.